2020, we're going to talk so much about faith that you may actually get tired of the term. But just so you know, my goal is not to teach you about faith, because honestly, that would be a useless exercise. My goal is to teach you how to live faith, because you know what? That'll make a difference. Last week, we met Jeremiah. And well, he is an Old Testament prophet, and he was given the undesirable job. Now, I do want to make sure you understand, he was given this job. He didn't volunteer. God said, Jeremiah, this is your job, and what your job is going to be calling God's people, not lost people, not people that didn't know God, calling God's people, the people that were already identifying themselves with a title that made them God's people, calling those people back to faith. And just so you know, this is not an easy job. Because when you're dealing with God's people, people that have always been labeling themselves as followers of God, you have to convince them that they're not living faith. And, you know, when you start laying that out there, people usually get argumentative. And they get upset. And they get there because they like the life that they've created for themselves, and they want to believe God's okay with it. I cannot tell you over the years how many people I have seen leave a church because they were living with sin. And they knew it. And when somebody called them on it, they got mad and they left. They go and they find themselves a new church, or they find themselves no church, a place where they can be comfortable in their sin. And today, that's where we're going to find Israel. Comfortable in their sin. That phrase just sends chills up my spine. Are we there? Are we comfortable with our sin now? See, today we are going to meet Judah. Remember, I already told you last week that there was one nation of Israel right after Solomon. They kind of split. There was the tribes that formed the nation of Israel. There were the tribes that formed the nation of Judah. And that's about all the history lesson I'm going to give you. When I say we're going to meet Judah, we're not going to go back and study its origins and its history and all that. If you want to do that, they make lots of good books on Amazon. You can go buy yourself one. What we're going to do is we're going to meet their sins. And think, how long of a sermon is this? I mean, there's a lot of sin out there to meet. I mean, there's a lot of things that's going on. And I guess in order to meet their sins, I want you to think about this question. How many people here today struggle with sin? You don't have to raise your hand. Because if you're honest, the answer would be everybody. There's a single solitary person sitting here or listening online or will listen to this sermon later. There is nobody that doesn't struggle with some kind of sin in their life. Those people don't exist. Everybody has something that they're struggling with. You know, in Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 40, Jesus summed up a relationship with God this way. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest command, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself, and all the law and the prophets hang on these two commands." And, well, I love that thought, because a lot of times when I think about a relationship with God, I think about a lot of things that I do and don't have to do. And Jesus comes along, and he takes all of those books and all of those commandments and all of those things in the Bible, and he summarizes them in three sentences, what it means to have a living faith relationship. And he did it. He swooped in and he took out all of those big books and all of those things and all of that teaching, and he just condensed it. And I began to think, you know what he did, right? He made living faith so simple. But at the same time, he made living faith so difficult. Because it isn't about do's and don'ts. And I began to think, what if we could do the same for our sin? If I'm going to have a sermon on sin, we could sit down and we could try listing them all one at a time, and list all the things that I did wrong this week, and man, we'll be here for a while. That's just my list. I mean, if we try to list everybody, we'll be here forever, because you know what? There's a lot of things that you do wrong during the week. But what if we could take it and we could just boil it down to two? What if I could just give you two things, and if you put this in your life, all the other sin will take care of itself? Would that not make it simpler? Also, wouldn't that make it more difficult? Because we're no longer going to be talking about actions, we're going to be talking about attitudes. And so today, we are going to look at two sins, and we're going to explore them because I think, and by the way, God also thinks, these are the root of all the other sins. We can chop all the bushes down, we can pull up all the weeds, but if you don't get these two roots, it's a losing battle. And how do I know God thinks it this way? Well, because I read Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13. Now, you got to remember, we're dealing with a nation of Judah that is, man, they're worshiping idols. They've got sexual immorality. They've got thievery. They've got everything going on in their life that they, as you could think of. They've nothing we've done today has created this new and different. They've got the same sins we've got. But when God comes to Jeremiah and he's going to call his people back to faith, this is what he says. My people have committed two sins. That's it. He summarized all the other things that they're doing in their life. Two sins, and here they are. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. And I read that, and I know what you're thinking. Great, more images. As a matter of fact, your eyes may be glazed over a little bit of that thought. Great, we've got more things that we have to understand. But remember the name of the sermon series, Visions of Faith. These are not actual things that they went out and did. God is not actually mad at them because they didn't come to a spring of water. He's not actually mad at them because they dug a hole. What he's mad at is the metaphors that these sins stand for. You see, that's all they are. It's just something to give us some context, give us a little object lesson about what God is talking about. Now, when you read this, there are some commonalities between these two sins. God, in his infinite wisdom of trying to design a very good lesson that you and I could follow even thousands of years later, both of them have to do with water. Everybody here interacts with water at some point in your life during the week. We bathe in it, hopefully. We drink it. You know, it's around. We use it for cooking. We use it to run our cars. It's part of the system there. Water is a big part of life. So it's always a good thing when you can tie your analogy to something that use on a regular basis. Everybody has interaction with water. Both of the things that God is talking about has an action on their part. Something they did. Something that started not with God, it started with the people of God. And then in the little object lesson here, they both have a result statement. Something that is going to happen to them because of what they did. And this is a good little outline for us to follow today. So we're going to take a look at these two images. And the first one here is God says, you have forsaken me. So what is forsaken? Well, the definition is simple. They have abandoned or deserted God. Oh, okay. So here's what happened. They just woke up and they said, I'm walking away from the relationship. You see, since God is the one that is speaking here, his problem is that Judas has abandoned him. Judah's not coming to him. Judah is doing something else with their life. You see, because God remembers. Jeremiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, as God was setting up this object lesson, this is what he told Jeremiah. The word of the Lord came to me. Go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem. This is what the Lord says. I remember the devotion of your youth. Oh, that always goes back to the love you had at first. How as a bride you loved me and followed me through the wilderness, through the land not sown. Israel was holy to the Lord. The first fruits of the harvest, all who devoured her were held guilty. Disasters overtook them, declares the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord, you descendants of Jacob, all the clans of Israel. So God is looking back at Israel and saying, I remember when. I remember how the good old days. And I have to tell you, in reading this, I sometimes wonder about how God remembers. Because I've read the Bible. And from her inception, Israel had problems following God. I mean, remember when they got to the Red Sea? Mountains on both sides, Pharaoh in the background, ocean out, the sea out in front of them. They cursed Moses and God because he brought them out there to die. Remember when they got to the mountain where God was handing out the Ten Commandments and all the covenant and everything that was out there? Moses came down, and what were the people doing? Worshiping a gold calf. Remember the entire reason they wandered through the wilderness? What happened? Well, they got to the land, and God said, go, and they said, no. God said, fine, wander. So I look at this, and I think, well, what is God remembering? Because from her inception, Israel was never really following. I mean, they never had this relationship where they lived faithfully, and so maybe God got it mixed up a little bit. No, God hasn't gone senile. He didn't forget. He understands. What God remembers is in their, even in their disobedience, when things got bad, they came running back to God. And something's changed. Something changed in the heart of Israel, in the heart of Judah, that now things are getting bad. And well, they're making other decisions. So that brings us to the what happens, and that is they walked away from the spring of living water. Now, in the region, water is one of the most valuable commodities. Fresh drinking water in the Arab region is in very short supply, and that is the one thing that makes the territory of Israel so valuable, is because inside of the land of Israel was this very intricate networks of fountains. A water fountain? Well, it's simply a hole in the earth from which water flows out onto the land. Kind of like this little thing. I can reach down here, and I can turn that on, and in a few minutes it starts to bubble, and water's coming up over it, and it fills this pot, and it fills this pot, and it fills this pot, and it's just this continuous supply of flowing, running water. And as you look at that, you have to remember, many springs in the region are responsible for the bodies of fresh drinking water and wells. So because they had this going on here, because they had all of these springs, they could live in the land. And well, God is reminding them that, well, when they chose to walk away from him, they chose to walk away from their source of life. I don't have to think about it that way a lot of times. A lot of times I think we think there's God, and then there's my life. And, you know, God can be part of my life, but the two things are not necessarily intertwined, because I can have my life, but I don't necessarily have to have God. And what God is now telling them is, it doesn't work that way, folks. This God thing is not a part of your life. God is your life. He is the source of the spring. And when you walk away from one, you walk away others. See, when we apply this to us, when God handed out the Ten Commandments, the first four had to do with the relationship with him. He did. He handed out those first ten, Commandments, and the first four were all about how do I relate to God? How does my relationship supposed to work? And when Jesus summarized the law with those two statements I read at the beginning, guess what? He started in the same place. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, all of who you are. In other words, your life and God, you can't separate the two. It can't be done once it begins put together. It's kind of like the scrambled egg theory. You know, when I was making pies this Christmas, I have an egg separator, and you can carefully tap the egg and crack the shell, and you begin to open. My mom can do it. She can pick holes in it and just drain it that way. Okay, I'm newfangled. Okay, so I crack it, and I put it over an egg separator, and the gooey white part drips down into the bowl, and the egg catcher catches the yolk, and then you take the yolk and you put it to the side. You know what I couldn't do? I couldn't scramble it and then use my egg separator to take it out. Because once it's scrambled, it's all mixed together. And that's your life and God when you begin to put it together. Jesus says, you know what? The relationship is together. And in our attempt to hang on to our actions that we develop, we begin to develop an attitude, who really needs God? I mean, after all, I can do all of this stuff on my own. And I just want you to know, that's a powerful sin. As a matter of fact, this is the very first sin, is it not? Isn't that what Satan told Eve and Adam? don't need God. If you eat that fruit, you'll be just like God. If you're just like God, then who needs God? You see, it was the root of all other sins, this idea that I don't need God to have a life. So God spends the better part of chapter 2, and I'll let you go read that on your own, asking a series of rhetorical questions because he wants to remind them and us that they abandoned God, not the other way around. God will remain faithful, but at some point you have to choose to come back to God if you want the life. If you want living faith, you cannot do it all on your own. Now, that brings us to our second statement, our little second piece here. God says their second sin is they have dug own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. And I know what you're thinking. I'm good here. I'm safe because I don't even know what a cistern is. So there is no way that I've committed this sin because I don't know what it is, so I couldn't have possibly have dug one. That's okay. I'm going to help you out here. I know what a cistern is, only because I looked it up. It is actually just a tank for storing water. So I didn't dig this, but it could work something like this. So I have a tank, and I take my water, and I carefully pour it in there. By the way, I'm not doing a magic trick, okay? I'm not turning this to wine or anything. We're good. I've already done this. So I take this, and now I have a supply of water. And just so you know, the water in this is the same water that's in that. There's no magic to it. So this cistern idea, a man-made solution to a God-provided spring. Now let that one wrap into your life for just a few minutes. See, what God is accusing them of doing is they dug their own cisterns. I want to walk away from the relationship. I want to walk away from the life. I want to walk away from this flowing fountain. But I realize I cannot live life without water. So I got my solution. I'm going to dig myself a pit. And then I'm going to try to take some of that water, and I'm going to take it with me, and I'm going to put it into my pit. And I'm going to fill it up. And I want you to remember the word there, the verb is dug. And there were no backhoes in the Old Testament. So that means this would have been a very time-consuming effort. They would have dug these cisterns one shovel at a time. Because a cistern does not get created overnight. These would have been these huge reservoirs they would have put on farms, and they would have brought water to them. So they would have water to do their crops and their animals. And they dug them all by themselves. See, it was one shovel at a time. They had to make their own cistern. And there was their cistern. Catch that word. Boom! That means not God consulted. It was not God considered. It was God forsaken. This was their idea. But you have forsaken me and served other gods, so I will no longer save you. So God is upset at them because they have dug these holes, and they're now trying to live these from water that they have provided for themselves, and they're no longer interested in the fountain. The other issue here is how they chose to deal with their Babylon problem. And remember, inside of Jeremiah, we have this thing going on that Babylon, she's a-coming. And they're taking over the world. And so Israel is now looking out there, and they see Babylon coming. They're like, we can't win that. If Babylon attacks, we're going to get defeated. And the problem is they dug their cistern. But you know what else they did? God said it was broken. God said, it's a broken cistern. That means I could pour water in this all day long, and it's never going to hold. It's never going to hold because my cistern is broken. And, well, Israel had done the same thing. They had made an alliance. This is what it says in verse 18. Now, why go to Egypt to drink water from the Nile? God keeps on this water thing to make sure they get it. And why go to Assyria to drink from the Euphrates? In verse 18, God mentions Israel. They formed alliances with two other countries. See, that's the trap. Instead of going to God, they sought alliance with the world. We'd never do that, right? We'd never put our faith in politicians that actually have passed laws to take away rights from the church. We never put our faith in them to put those rights back, would we? We never look out into the world and say, well, we need you to do this, this, and this so I can live faithfully. I mean, we'd never do something like that, would we? You see, they had dug these cisterns, provided themselves water, and it's not holding water because it was broken. And it's amazing when we look at this, the plans we come up with when we decide to go to one. Isn't it what we do? Man, I walk away from this fountain and God is calling me back, and you know what? I can come up with all kind of plans to solve my own problems. I can work 2 or 3 jobs. I can just sit at home and do nothing and collect a check. I can sit here and just keep living any life that I want. And God's just supposed to bless it. That's the mentality that Israel had taken. They hadn't taken the fountain relationship thing seriously at all. They just wanted God to fill their cup. They just wanted God to pour a little more in so that they could continue, but they wanted it in their own way, their own system. And God says, you know what? That's the root of all sin. When you start changing God's plan for your plan, and you start walking away from the fountain and start walking towards your own design, isn't that what Adam and Eve did? God had a plan. Gave them all that garden to eat from and said, hey, I only got one thing I don't want you to do. Don't eat from that tree. Really? Why not that tree? Because I said so. That you do, you're going to die. Really? I wonder what death feels like. That curiosity begins to come. And they walked away from the tree of life and walked toward the tree of knowledge and good and evil. Ta-da. Sin. That's the root of it. And I can take every sin in our life and I can walk it right back, and this is where it starts. So here's the thing. Stop trying to stop sinning. And let's start trying to live faith. There's a big difference. See, because the ironic thing is eventually Assyria and Egypt fall to Babylon. This is what it says. Judah's plan did not hold water, and they found themselves all alone. They made these alliances with Israel and Egypt and Assyria, and Babylon conquered them before they conquered Jerusalem. So now Jerusalem finds themselves all alone, and they still won't go back to God. This is what it says in Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 6 through 10. During the reign of King Josiah, the Lord said to me, have you seen the faithless Israel has done? She has gone up to every high hill under every spreading tree and has committed adultery there. I thought that after she had done all of this, she would return to me, but she did not. And her unfaithful sister Judah saw it. I gave faithless Israel her certificate of divorce and sent her away because of her adulteries. Yet I saw that her unfaithful sister Judah had no fear. She also went out and committed adultery because Israel's immorality mattered so little to her. She defiled the land and committed adultery with stone and wood, the idea of worshiping idols. In spite of all this, her unfaithful sister Judah did not return to me with all her heart. Back to that statement Jesus made. But only in pretense, declares the Lord. They came back to God because, you know, the armies are getting big and they wanted God to do something about it, but they didn't come back to God asking, God, can I live in a relationship with you? They just asked God, fix my problem. Save my life. Spare me, God. Mercy, mercy, mercy. And God said, you know what the problem with mercy is? It's coupled with this thing called grace. And this thing called grace begins with the idea of the relationship. And you know what? When I apply this to us, I probably don't need to say much to make it apply for you to get it, because I can look at your face and say, you know what? I get it. I get where you're going. Because problems come and battles are fought, and you know what? We seek our answers and there is no God. For many of us, that's where we start. And we may participate in some religious act or pay some homage to a tradition so that we can say, I'm a person. Remember, these were God's people. They carried the title. But the honesty is, in the real life problems, we dig. And we dig. And we dig. And we dig. And you know what? contract solutions break. I came up with a plan and I had it all lined up, and well, that didn't work up. So what I do, I make plan B, C, D, E, F, G. I just keep watching plan after plan break, but man, I keep digging. I did. And then the sad thing is, I sit there and I watch my kingdoms fall. Now, I'm not talking about a physical kingdom here. I'm talking about my life plans. Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 4. For this is what the Lord says. I will make you a terror to yourself. I'm going to make you afraid to even trust yourself. And to all your friends, with your own eyes, you will see them fall by the sword of their enemies. I will give all of Judah into the hands of the king of Babylon, who carried them away to Babylon and put them to the sword. I promised no video clips, but I really thought about that Buzz and Woody thing that I showed you right back in the I Choose sermon series, where Woody was trapped underneath the little box and Buzz is trapped to the rocket. And you get the idea that God is saying, because of the fact you've chosen to walk away and build your own cisterns, you've got two choices. You're either going to be captured or you're going to be destroyed. And I read that, and I'm thinking, so if God thinks this way of Israel, who were his chosen people, and were not living by faith and living in faith, and he chose to allow this happen to them, what makes us so special? I mean, a title isn't what we're looking for here. God says it's all about the relationship. God says, you know what? The problem is that I expect this from God's people. I expect this from anybody who claims the name of God, that they're going to be a follower, that you're living by the fountain and not by the system. You're living by the faith and you're not out there digging your own plans and then asking God to fix them for you. See the difference here? I told you, this living faith thing, a whole lot more easy than you think. It's simple. God wants a relationship with you, but it's difficult because it isn't just about a list of do's and don'ts. See, you know, what the sad thing is, God never gave up on it. The voice of Jeremiah called to Judah until the day it fell. Chapter 3, verses 14 through 18. This is the plea that God made. And you'll see this plea. If you read through Jeremiah, you'll see this plea over and over and over, all the way up to chapter 52. Return, faithless people, declares the Lord, for I am your husband. I will choose you, one from a town and one from a clan, and bring you to Zion. There I will give you shepherds after my own heart, who will lead you with the knowledge and understanding. In those days when your numbers have increased greatly in the land, decrees the Lord, people will no longer say the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. They're no longer going to focus on the God box. Instead, it will never enter their minds or be remembered. It will not be missed, nor will another be made. At that time, they will call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, where God lives, not where God is represented. All the nations will gather in Jerusalem to honor the name of the Lord. No longer will they follow stubbornness and evil hearts. In those days, the people of Judah will join the people of Israel. Together they will come from a northern land, a land that I gave your ancestors as an inheritance. In spite of all they did, God said, you know what? If you just turn around and walk back, I'm only one step away. In spite of the fact that you placed your faith in a broken cup, you can still turn around. The fountain is only one step back. Wow. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? But you do understand. Two sins, one choice. See, God's problem was there were two sins, the fact that they forsook the relationship and went looking for a better deal. But God said, there's really only one choice, and it solves both sins. What's the only choice? Come back. Repent. Start again. Lay it out there in front of God. Say, you know what? Okay, I'm a bonehead. I messed up again. God said, fine, we can work with that. I can forgive bonehead. But I can't forgive if you just keep walking toward the sister that's broken. That will never work. So this morning, I want to start ask yourself, question I ask you at the beginning. Are you struggling with sin? Stop trying to fix it. Stop. No more self-help books. No more lessons on 20 steps to do this. No more trying to quit sinning. Quit trying to sin. Or stop sinning. Quit trying that process. I'm going to just quit. Because you know what? Eventually you're going to fail. You go for a while and your sin will be getting better and you'll be overcoming it. And then all of a sudden it only takes one slip and you're right back where you started. Stop. Get off the treadmill. Because it's not going to work. It hasn't worked yet. It's not going to change. Jeremiah gave us the solution. Come back to the fountain. Bring your sin with you to the fountain. Bring it all back. Don't worry about getting it right before you come. God says, just come back to the fountain and we can work with all the rest. That's a choice you have to make. Not me. I can't make it for you. If I could, I would. But let me encourage you today to ask yourself, which am I choosing? The flowing fountain or the broken system? And if you find yourself serving brokenness, good news for you. Come to the fountain. Just turn around and come back. God will take you back just like you are, broken and all. He's okay with it.